bless my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focus need on you. Ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. My acres of a land I've achieved, it may be hard for you to stop and believe, but for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all.
Welcome back to Sports Talk in the Berg, coming at you live from RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. We have a special panel for you today. What is going on here? Do you hear that echo?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Hold on, stand by. What is going on? Let me try. What? No, that's not it. Okay. No, that wasn't it either. I don't understand. That's weird. Introduce yourselves while I fix this.
All right. Hi, I am Sam Anthony. I'm a freshman here at Robert Morris.
My name is Colin Wilson, freshman at Robert Morris, sport management major.
Ian Kiss, the sophomore here at RMU, sports comm major and a sports management minor.
All right, start. So we're gonna begin talking about the Pirates. So
Arrgh.
The Pirates have gone into a slump. Ever since we went back from last week's show, they've lost four of their last five, and then they just won last night, or they lost last night. Five out of their last seven they've lost since we were last on air. So let's talk about what's gone wrong with them, Ian.
I think a lot of it has to do with their lineup that Coach Clint Hurdle's been putting out there. Right now, it is September. You have the excuse of players need rest, but when this is this close, not only in the pennant race, but in your own division, you're probably not going to catch up to take the division over the Cardinals, because right now they just seem unstoppable, but then the Cubs seem unstoppable. You need to put your best lineup out there, and giving Jung Ho Gong days off and putting Mercer out there. I'm sorry, you need to put Gong out there. And then giving Kutch days off. I'm sorry, he needs to be in the lineup. He did homer tonight already, as they're up 4-0 over the Reds in Cincinnati. I don't know. Like, you need to put your best lineup out there, and I blame it on the coaches unless the players, but say that players say they want a day off, but right now, like, who would want to say they want a day off this close with the Cubs on fire right now? And they beat St. Louis 9-0 yesterday.
And, like, I'm not worried about St. Louis catching St. Louis, because at this point we're so far back that should be something we should be worried about. I'm worried about the Cubs because they're hot and they're about two games behind us now. And if we lose that home game and you're going to that one-game playoff, you want every edge you can get, because the Cubs are looking so good right now.
Oh, my. Could you imagine Wrigley first playoff game in how many years? That'd be tough.
The atmosphere would be insane.
No doubt.
And, I mean, everyone would be rooting for the Cubs. I mean, you know, hometown favorite there. And
I mean, you're still two games up on the Cubs right now, but you're on the last stint of that nine-game away streak. So to lose five of the last seven, that's tough, especially against Milwaukee, who's next to nothing this year. But they did steal two from the Cardinals. But like you said, I'm not worried about the Cardinals right now. They're 5.5 games back. They're not going to catch them. I'm sorry. They're just not. I'm more focused on the wild card position. So if they can come in, they have Milwaukee four-game series coming up starting Thursday. And then they have a doubleheader, the 15th against Cubs. If they can steal
it's
two.
A big one.
And I believe A.J. Burnett comes back.
This Thursday.
And then they announced that Gerrit Cole will be pitching in that doubleheader.
Okay. Well, I mean, if they could steal both of those, that'd be great, because it's a four-game series with the doubleheader against the Cubs. So that's really – I'm not so focused on this series against the Reds. Obviously, you know, they need to win. But I'm not really worried about what they did in these past seven games as much as what they can do with this eight-game home streak coming on. So, I don't know. I'm staying optimistic. I'm looking at it, you know.
My opinion, you need to win the games that the schedule is giving to you. They give you the Brewers. Okay. They're giving you the Reds. You need to take advantage of two of the worst teams in baseball.
All right, in I fixed division. It. Go ahead. I fixed it.
So that's all I basically have to say about the Pirates. They got to put the best lineup out there, and AJ coming back, but someone's going to – they have to make more pitching moves. I say put Locke in the pen because Happ has proven that he can pitch right now. So don't remove him to give it to a guy that's been starting all year. Let them earn their positions in the rotation right now. So they got it. So Hurdle has that decision, Searidge have that decision to make in the upcoming days. But put the best lineup up out there you can, because that's the thing they're getting criticized right now on.
All
right.
So if I'm hearing that correctly, are you like against? Are you not a fan of Clint Hurdle? Do you think he's not doing a good job putting the team together?
I don't know. Like I agree with him at times, but for some reason, he's trying to change things up, and I think he's trying to give guys they basically had one lineup when Harrison and Mercer were on the DL. But now that they're back, they want to give those guys at bats and playing time. And Harrison, you can put wherever, because I think that's a big deal why Ramirez is at first right now, to give Harrison third base. But Hurdle likes giving guys days off. And
right. That's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing, but it's been happening more frequently after they've already had days off. So unless – obviously, we're not in the clubhouse. We're not there during batting practice, so we don't know – we don't see players warming up that much. So besides what I see on Snapchat and the Pirate Snap stories, other than that, you don't know what goes on in the clubhouse. But I don't know, Clint. They have been questionable calls from me right now on him.
Go ahead, Sam.
The thing I'm really kind of focused on right now is you look at guys like Jordy Mercer and Josh Harrison, you're right, they missed a lot of time in the DL. So, I mean, you have to think of it in maybe another perspective, that instead of they're trying to give these guys days off, that they're really more focusing on trying to get Jordy Mercer and Josh Harrison back to the form that they know they can play in. Because, like, Jordy Mercer, you know, he's not a guy who – you know, hits high average or does big things, but he gets the timely hits that puts us in position, and that's what they're trying to get him back into. Because if you're thinking about a deep playoff run, you know, the teams that win those are the ones that can do different things in the lineup, and I think that's something that can give the Pirates an edge. Is I really do think that when everyone's healthy, they have a lot more pieces, especially when you're looking at a Cardinals team that's really struggled this season staying healthy. And in the long run here, if the Pirates can stay healthier than the Cardinals, if we can go win that wild card game, they're going to last in a 5-game series against the Cardinals.
I'll say this. I read somewhere, I can't remember, I think it was DK that wrote it, about how hard the manager's job is and how, under the circumstances, how well Clint Hurdle has used everyone that he has. Because I think it's something to be said that we have this problem, though, that we have too many startable players for the number of positions that are on the field. And I think people are looking past that problem and saying, oh man, that sucks. Why can't we just have 9 guys to start every game? But that's not a bad problem to have. That's a great problem to have. And Clint Hurdle's done an okay job. I mean, you can look, obviously it's what have you done for me lately. When you see that they've lost so many in a row, or they've lost 5 out of 7, you're going to say, oh, look, Clint Hurdle sucks. Clint Hurdle can't do his job right. But if you look at the end of the season, and if you look at the final stats and how many innings pitchers had, how many days off guys had, you're going to say, wow, I think we're going to say, wow, we didn't realize how far ahead he was thinking when he was making these moves. I really think that's what's going to happen, because I know for a fact. Well, it's not. I don't know for a fact. I'm pretty sure ballpark, the number of scheduled days off these guys have over the next month, up until the end of the season, is 2. Mm-hmm. So it's a good problem to have, and when you get to give guys extra days off, it just preps them better for the postseason. I think that's where he's headed, especially with giving Cole the extra rest, so that he can get ready, if need be, to start for the wild card game, which is getting more and more likely as we head to it.
I just have one more comment on this. Yesterday, they started Sean Rodriguez three errors, and then he got Ninth inning, he's on base, got picked off.
Right.
Got caught sleeping. On Chapman, who you need your eyes wide open against. He's in the lineup. He's not going to start in the playoffs unless injury needed. So
unless it's a left-handed starter.
True. So to give him playing time right now, but like starting positions, that's what I question.
The reason why he's doing that, though, is because Sean Rodriguez has been tearing it up from the plate recently. The last couple games, he has gone. Let me find this really fast. Does anyone else have it? Here, I'll just search it real quick.
Well, I mean, like, also you can focus on the fact that the Pirates don't really have like a real first baseman, and like they've just kind of been throwing people in. Like, and what's
Ramirez playing in for the first time in his 18-year career tonight.
They have Morse right now, who's played first base he's also been in the league longer than Alvarez has, who's your starting first baseman the whole season. Then you have Ishikawa, but he's injured, or he's on the DL right now, coming back, but still. And then you start Ramirez. And I think that has a lot to do with giving third base to Harrison, because they want to give him time in the lineup.
The last four games that he's played in, up until yesterday's loss against Cincinnati, Sean Rodriguez came in as a pinch hitter versus the Rockies on the 29th of August, 1-for-1. He started against St. Louis the 4th, 2-for-2 with a double and an RBI. And then the next day at St. Louis, even though they lost, 3-for-4 with a double and a strikeout. And then the 6th, 2 days ago against St. Louis, came in as a pinch hitter, 1-for-1 with a walk, a home run, and two RBIs. And so that's why he was in the lineup, because he had a hot bat. Mm-hmm. You got to get, especially when you have too many guys for one position, it becomes who has produced better lately at the plate, and just get him into a spot in the lineup. That's what it comes down to at this point for the Pirates.
I agree. I mean, I think it was 20 games they played in a row before the last off day, and then they had a 9-game away, you know, home, mm-hmm. or an away stint. It's just getting guys in there that can take a couple days off. They need to get starters days off. And they have depth in their lineup. You have Harrison on the bench tonight. You have Alvarez on the bench tonight. You have Sean Rodriguez on the bench tonight. Those are three quality guys, in my opinion, that are capable of playing any given day. And also they have, I believe you said, two off days in the remainder of the season. And one of them is the 14th, the 15th. They have a doubleheader against Chicago. That's an important start of the series.
Yep.
And
especially against Chicago.
Oh, definitely.
Hot on their tail for this wild card.
Definitely. So I don't mind them, you know, taking some players out of the lineup, because they have quality depth to go with it. It's not like they're taking guys out like McCutchen and they're putting in some, you know, unknown center fielder. They have guys that are established on the bench that they can put in there.
We'll continue talking about the Pirates over the coming weeks, obviously, as we get going. Just an in-game update. Pirates leading the Reds 5-0 after 3. So it looks like Clint Hurdle might have plucked the wrong strings for for tonight's lineup, it looks like. Let's switch gears a little bit. We were talking about it before the show, about the Deflategate, Spygate situation. And I'm giving us a time limit.
And the drama continues.
Of 10 minutes. 10 minutes to finish talking about this and tease the James Conner college players issue. And we'll touch on that in the second segment. So let's just go right into it. Today, there was an article released for ESPN the magazine talking about looking really in-depth of what went on in Spygate and how the connections – Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League, handled these two situations with the Patriots in Spygate and Deflategate, and how there are some similarities, and how some view that Goodell may have used Deflategate as an even-up for what he didn't do in Spygate. It goes through all this stuff about how Bill Belichick lied about how involved he was in Spygate, and how he threw all the employees under the bus for they were doing it since 2000, and how they allegedly cheated taping a walkthrough for the Super Bowl against the Rams, how they upset the Rams. That was a big deal for everyone back then. And again, this was 8 years ago that Spygate came out. And apparently, the article goes on to say that even after the Patriots were warned several times, even after Spygate was made public, they continued to tape coaches' signals and for all intents and purposes, cheating, right? So that brings us to Deflategate and how Tom Brady was absolved of his four-game suspension. That came out. Now the Steelers have to appropriately adjust for one of the game's greatest quarterbacks. It's not going to be easy, and now that makes the chances of the Steelers going into Foxborough with a win, coming out with a win, a lot slimmer. So let's first talk about your opinion on the comparison to Spygate and Deflategate, because in the article it outlines how in the 2002 AFC Championship game at Pittsburgh, the Steelers thought that the Patriots knew what they were going to run before they even ran it. And now that this article came out and exposed that, people are getting a lot more worked up about how the Patriots keep getting out of these scandals.
I think it's really telling about the Patriots organization in general. You know, you have the last 15 years, really, where the Patriots have been, you know, the team. You know, I mean, everyone's talked about them. They're the team that is consistently contending. But, you know, why is it that these things keep happening when they win the Super Bowl? You know, it was Spygate when they won it, you know, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. You have Deflategate this year. There are just so many things where it just makes me wonder about, you know, what you're going to look at when you think of the Patriots in 15 years.
Right. Colin?
I am fed up with Deflategate, Spygate, whatever. Deflategate, it's been going on for 8 months now. We're talking about deflating footballs here.
Yep.
We're talking about deflating footballs.
We're talking about the integrity of the National Football League.
It's That's deflating footballs. About. Spygate was 8 years ago. I don't even want to hear Spygate. But I'm going to touch on deflating footballs. Jay Feely, former kicker for the NFL, he had a similar issue in 2009 against the Patriots with doctoring K-balls, kicker balls. And he wasn't even disciplined, let alone investigated. And I agree it was a makeup call for Goodell in the NFL for the Tom Brady incident with the four games. But, I mean, that's like receiving 20 years for a speeding ticket, in my opinion. For deflating footballs, we're still talking about this 8 months. 8 months after it, it blows my mind.
Well, part of the reason why Goodell was criticized so heavily for Spygate was how fast he made his decision. And then the article, it says this in the article, that he, like, made it a goal of his to make this as long and dragged out as possible, so it would seem like all the information and all the factors that weighed into the decision would be sufficient enough for people to believe that he actually took his time on this, as opposed to when Spygate came out, he had a ruling made the next day after the things came out and the appeal went up. He had a judgment out the next day. So I think that's something that you could say.
It's going to be he said, she said kind of thing. Is going to be who dislikes the Patriots, who likes the Patriots. Of course, a lot of Pittsburgh fans and teams in general dislike Tom Brady and the Patriots, Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick. So I think it's a lot of people saying, of course, the Deflategate is truth. They cheated in Spygate. Like, they're known for cheating. Would Deflategate gotten this big if, well, Goodell doesn't like the Steelers either, so let's use the Rams. If the Rams got in trouble for deflating footballs, would it have been gotten that big? That's why I always question. Or a team that doesn't get in trouble and Goodell doesn't punish much, because, well, we can't use the Steelers because people criticize Goodell for that too. So
yeah, it's funny you say that, because last year, or actually I'm sorry, yeah, it was last year, week 9, it was the Carolina Panthers versus the Minnesota Vikings, and they were using the heaters to heat up the balls, and the NFL gave them a warning.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, essentially, it was the same thing. They were doctoring the balls, and that's what it says in the rule book. It says in the policies that you're issued a warning. And I get that it's the AFC Championship game. I'm not excusing anything Tom Brady did, but you're correct in the fact that this has been done before, mm-hmm. and even Colin touched on that. And this is the first time that it's gotten big attention. It's the first time there's been a big punishment, which, you know, is why it got overturned.
And I think it goes back to Goodell in other situations, Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, the punishments not being, especially with Ray Rice, that heavy at first. So I think he wanted to make a stand, but then that came back to haunt him too by the four games. So I don't know, Goodell, I don't think he's going to be around much longer because he can't do his job anymore, especially with the NFL PA always having the second hand and winning the past six times or something, even when it goes back to the Saints with their bounty scandal. Guys were suspended all season, half seasons were there for game one. So, or somewhere in the season they were able to come back under their less than what they were punished for. So I don't know how longer Goodell is, but it's hard to say if back to the what we were talking about, it's hard to say if the Patriots, if these two have any connections, and I say let's get over it, but
I mean, don't you think it's a little ironic, though, that you have Tom Brady, you know, speaking to the press and saying, you know, I'm really sorry that the NFL had to go through this. I'm sorry that this hurt the integrity of the game. To me, that's frustrating, especially because he says this and then all this new Spygate stuff comes out.
Do you guys think that this diminishes the legacy of the Patriots' four Super Bowls?
100%.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
Why?
Because when you look at the, you know, sports in general, the idea of sports is, you know, the honesty, the integrity of it. You know, I could talk about what they tell you in intro to sport management class, but I'm not gonna. You know, but that's why people like it. It's, you know, it's stuff that you can't, it's not, you know, fiction on TV. It's, you know, real stuff. And it's like betting on your team, or it's like, you know, changing the results because you want these results. Mm-hmm. And to me, that ruins the game for me. I mean, I'm not gonna stop watching football. I'm not gonna say that because I love to watch. But to me, it takes away from it.
Colin?
I was listening to The Herd, the debut of The Herd today on Fox Sports 1, and Colin Cowherd, I thought, had a great line saying, did Malcolm Butler's interception win the Super Bowl, or did the, you know, the issues with the Patriots organization win the Super Bowl? I would say Malcolm Butler's interception. I don't think Malcolm Butler's interception had anything to do with issues behind that. I don't think Adam Vinatieri's, you know, game-winning field goals back in the day had anything to do with that. I don't think it takes away from the Super Bowl. People will look at the Patriots organization differently after this, and I can understand that. It has, I mean, it, like I said, 8 months for deflation of a football. It definitely has gotten out of hand, in my opinion, but people will view this differently. Spygate's always been, you know, an issue with the Patriots organization. People have viewed it differently. But to me, it does not take away from the organization, the franchise they produced throughout the last 15 years. It's been, I don't think that diminishes their franchise that they've built.
Ian?
I don't know much. I don't know. It's just, it's frustrating that teams go to cheating, because the Patriots have had talent that you don't think they would need to cheat. But I don't know, maybe Kraft and Belichick are more devious than, and Tom Brady too, they're more devious than we thought they were. And they're really getting that bad reputation right now. Not so much their owner, but Belichick and Tom Brady. Because this whole Deflategate was basically only on Tom Brady, but then obviously Spygate was the whole organization. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard to say. We'll never know the facts. We'll never get the full details, but they're going downhill, and they're going downhill quick with everybody in the NFL right now.
Colin, last word before we switch topics.
And today I had, you know, read the ESPN report and whatnot. It was about that being a makeup call and everything, that mm-hmm. next time someone was caught cheating, he was going to lay down the law, basically. Mm-hmm. And then I heard Goodell speak on Mike and Mike in the morning this morning, saying, you know, he wanted fairness. Well, I didn't think, you know, you said week 9 in Carolina versus Minnesota. Why didn't he address it then? Why didn't he do something then? Or 2009 with Jay Feely. Why didn't he do something then? Why does he have to wait until? And I understand the Patriots were, you know, the prior team to do Spygate, and now Deflategate comes up. So it seems like a good opportunity to make up for that. But I don't understand why it had to go, why it had to skip those games and those instances.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people are now larger than they have ever before calling for Goodell's head, because he has proven time after time. I think it said in that article that he's 0-5 in appeals.
Mm-hmm. He is, yeah.
So not if consistent. that's not great. He also said that he would prefer a more limited role in the disciplinary actions because it gave him too much work, I think is summarizing whatever he said. And that kind of made me angry because they've paid this guy $35, $44 million for a year, and he's complaining about the workload. About
that's his job.
Yeah, like that is what you do.
He signed up for that.
Besides going to charity events and cutting ribbons, that is what you do for a living, and you're making $44 million doing it. Like that, just do it. Either litigate it, he can make. Like assignments for people, he can make other departments have the disciplinary action. He just chose not to, and now I think he's really trying to rescind on his actions a little bit and really save himself. Save face.
I don't
think
he's going to be there much longer.
No, I don't think he's going to be there much longer either. His contract's up in 2019, and we'll keep it updated on that. See if that actually happens. I mean, that's still 4 years,
and
though.
And a forced resignation, you have that's to have, what, 24 of the 32 NFL teams agree on that?
Yeah, and that's
they'd still have to buy him out for $150 million. That's why they won't do it.
Right. No, exactly. The owners only care about one thing, and that's money.
Definitely.
That's what you got to learn, folks. In the NFL, all you need is money, and you can succeed. Okay, when we come back at Sports Talk in the Berg on RMU Radio, we will talk about James Conner from the Pittsburgh Panthers getting hurt, what that means for his draft status coming up next year. And that will bring us into a discussion of how unfair it is that college athletes do not get compensated for their time on the gridiron. When we come back, Sports Talk in the Berg, RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Sports Talk in the Berg coming back live. RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Ian Kist, Colin Wilson, Sam Anthony, Zach Lauffer with you today. We just left on the break promising to talk about James Conner and his injury. And let's just go ahead and start this video real fast. I have ready for you, and then that'll springboard us right into the conversation.
Pittsburgh running back James Conner will miss the rest of the season with a torn MCL, requiring surgery and an injury he suffered in Saturday's win over Youngstown State. Ray Crawford here with managing editor Pete Futek. Boy, what a tough break here for the Panthers. What does this mean for them?
Well, it wasn't supposed to be that big a deal. Supposedly, yeah. They just kept him out because he got tweaked and dinged up, and they were going to keep him out for Youngstown State for the future. Obviously, it turned out to be a massive injury for them. Kadri Allison stepped in, ran for over 200 yards, but that was against Youngstown State. Now he's going to have to be that big, tough back. He's a talent. He was a three-star recruit. He's got the ability to potentially be the next James Conner, but James Conner was an All-American. Obviously, a humongous blow for the start of the Pat Narduzzi era.
They certainly have depth there, but to lose the reigning ACC player of the year is going to be a
big test.
Don't
get better by losing James Conner.
A few thanks very much. For more coverage of college football, keep it here to campusinsiders.com.
So there you have it on that. So immediate thoughts of the James Conner injury, go.
I just hate seeing it happen with some, you know, a good college kid, a great athlete. You know, he had 8 rushers for 77 yards and 2 rushing touchdowns in the time before he got injured. And, you know, that's huge numbers for a kid who is really potentially looking to go pro. That really hurts. I feel bad for the kid.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Sam said. ACC reigning ACC player of the year to go out with an MCL injury first game of the year. I mean, that sucks for his draft status. You saw with Todd Gurley, although he went 10th overall, probably not the same talent as Todd Gurley per se, but it just sucks because teams won't be able to watch him this season to grow on what he did last year. And also you have Quadre Olsen came up, rushed 207 yards in his absence, but still, I mean, you're losing a guy who, I mean, if you talk best running backs of last year, I mean, he's definitely mentioned first team All-American last year, so mm-hmm. It definitely sucks for not only himself but the Pitt Panthers as well.
When your coach gets emotionally into that, like, has a little breakdown announcing the loss of their star, like, you know, you're something special. Narduzzi, very emotional guy, and yesterday in his conference, he tell he was getting choked up a little bit, announcing that James Conner will be out, MCL tear. He hates to see something happen to a guy that has the motivation and the time and effort he's put in to get himself to where he wants himself to be for this upcoming Panther season. And now, first game, he's done.
So what do you think that his injury was a cause of Connor's own accord, or because he shouldn't have even been playing in that game, or was it just football and it just happens? I mean, before you say anything, I think football is a dangerous sport. It's by nature. People are hitting each other every single second of the game. So injuries happen. It's tough. It's tough watching a guy with so much talent, so much promise, go down with a season-ending injury. By no means is this his end, the end of his career, though. A lot of players come back from MCL, ACL tears all the time. But the fact that Pittsburgh, the school, made money off of that game, and now Conner has to be out. He's receiving none of that. He has to. The school is paying for, I believe, most of his medical expenses in his rehab because he's on scholarship and scholarships cover that now, but not all of it. And if he can't afford it, he's putting his family in debt, and that's something that no one wants to do. So, for this segment, we want to talk about: should college athletes get paid? I actually wrote a research paper on this. So I'm just going to let you guys handle this, and then I'll lay down the law here. All right. Using Conner as an example, should college athletes be paid? We're talking about the profit sports now. football, basketball, football, men's and women's basketball. You can make the argument that everyone should get paid, but that would mean that would cost the university money. Go ahead.
I have mixed feelings about this. When you get scholarship, when you basically sign up to play collegiate sports, you know you're not getting paid. It's in the rule book that they cannot take any payment whatsoever. And those are the rules. And now this Connor incident brings up a debate because, like Zach said, his medical bills, he's on scholarship, that picks it up a little bit, but still his family could be in debt. It's hard to – what they're going to make probably won't be enough to pay medical bills, especially MCL tear. He's going to have therapy after surgery. His medical bills are going to be really, really high. I don't know. They're not making a ton right now at first as this new – their NCAA is implementing this new rule. But college athletes sign up to play sports for free. And the players do it, some because they know they have professional talent, some because they have talent and they love playing sports. They've guaranteed they played all their life whatever sport they play. So I think a lot of athletes do it for the love of the game, but now that you're giving them money, that also could pursue players that just played in high school. And then you see it all the time. They play in high school, want to take a break, and they don't want to play. They want to go to school, enjoy school, and get into their professional life. But now you may see if they're going to pay them a little bit, you're going to get a lot more people trying to step up their game and become a collegiate athlete because they can even make money and call it, like they could get paid to play a sport and then be done with it after their senior year in college and then get into their professional career and then that like they're set to go. So
you are for or against it? I'm not. You said like conflicting stuff. Are you for paying college athletes or against it? There's no in between. You can't get off with being in between.
Right now, no.
No,
I'm not for it.
Okay.
I would say the same thing. I'm not for it. You know, the thing for me, and it's so tricky because, you know, you hate to say, you know, I want him to pay for this, you know, all his medical expenses. But the thing for me is, you know, if I get hurt playing club baseball, you know, Robert Morris isn't going to be like, oh, you know, let me pay for those medical expenses. You know, like Ian said, you sign up to play that sport. And, you know, there's been so many attempts to unionize. But, like, you know, when Northwestern tried to unionize a couple years ago, even, you know, Coach Fitzgerald was like, don't do this. This is a bad idea. You know, it leads to it opens a whole other can of worms, a whole other issue. You know, like how much should these kids get? And I just think that there's more problems than benefits to it personally.
Colin.
I guess I'd be for some sort of compensation.
Okay.
For student athletes.
Okay. So, all right. So for you, we want your reasoning and then a format.
Okay. My reasoning is because I'll use Braxton Miller, quarterback converted into receiver example. Okay. Torn labrum, missed all last season. What happens if he can't come back from that? He can't play football ever again. I mean, that's a tough injury to come back from anyway. And impressive last night, by the way, but a tough injury to come back from.
His scholarship might be revoked.
Exactly.
Yep.
And
that's part of the problem. That's part of the solution.
Exactly.
They should award more multi-year
scholarships.
And here he
is, or maybe a knee injury. What happens if I mess up my knee or mess up my leg? I can't walk right the rest of my life. I definitely can't play football. I mean, you see it every year. A couple athletes from major programs can't play football the next year just because of injuries. Concussions. What happens if I get a concussion? I can't function right in the head due to football. But the colleges and the universities make millions off my marketing for them, basically. Mm-hmm. I go out there. I give them my all. I think the rule is you can only have 17 hours of practice per week.
Yeah, it's something like that. They have rules for everything.
But you know as well as I do, you know, you practice 2 hours, you're supposed to give at least 3 hours. You know, that's how I was taught as a kid, mm-hmm. growing up, just playing high school sports. I'm sure it's different in college, especially in these major universities, these major programs.
Right.
So they're given 30, 40 hours a week. That's a full-time job. So it's a little bit harder to focus on academics, which they usually get, if you're good enough, get free tuition, free room and board, whatever. But is that really, I don't know how to put this.
Is that enough?
Exactly. Is that enough? If I mess up my knee for the rest of my life, if I get a concussion, I can't focus. That degree means nothing to me if I can't function in the head right. Mm-hmm. Or is the school going to pay for my medical bills after making millions off my name, off my marketing for them?
Something worth noting: if you have in that scenario, the school would pay for your medical bills up until you graduate, and once you graduate, they would cut you off. That happened. I think it was either an E60 or a 30 for 30, or not a 30 for 30 film, but it was like one of those shorts that ESPN does on Sunday sometimes, like those long stories, and those packages. And it was a guy who got a concussion, paralyzed from the neck down. So, and he was a sophomore, I think. So the school paid for his medical bills, didn't revoke his scholarship, still got free tuition up until he graduated. Once he graduated, his parents got an envelope that just was piled with medical bills that the school had been paying, but now that the family, now that he had graduated, had to pay.
And he gave it his all for that program, and then he's left with all this debt. And that's just what I have a problem with. I'm not saying that they should be paid like professional athletes.
Right.
I don't agree with that. I don't even think necessarily they might not even see money up front, but just some sort of fund that they get after they're out of the program,
so after
or some
they,
sort
after
of insurance,
graduate.
Some sort of insurance, like a guaranteed,
like a trust fund, maybe for after they graduate, they dip into that.
And I'm not the most educated on how to do it per se,
right?
But I definitely would like to see, and I actually like to get more educated on the subject, but just be able to receive some sort of benefits besides just the free tuition, which I mean, I'm a college student. I realize how valuable
right.
that is.
Right. Right.
But definitely, if you're giving 30 to 40 hours a week at least to a program that's making millions off your name, I think you should receive something a little bit more, whether it be insurance, a little bit of compensation.
So you're not for like a stipend, like most people, like a contract, like a stipend.
No.
You're not for
– no.
Okay. I will say I'm against it. Just for the record, I am against paying college athletes, and I will tell you in hopefully under 5 minutes – I will say, just to be devil's advocate, once I watched this one program in my common sport class last semester, and this guy, it was like a Tosh.0 kind of deal, and this guy was talking about paying college athletes, and he said the college athletic academic system is like, say it was a nursing student, and she just graduated and she's going into a hospital. It's like telling, this is what the guy said. It's like a nurse walking into her first day as a training nurse, right? And you have to learn a lot still. Walking in first day, the resident nurse comes up to her and says, okay, we're going to start your training tonight, but here's a trumpet. Go learn how to play it on your own time. And if you don't learn how to play it, you're fired. And I just sat back and thought, wow, like that is actually kind of true. And that only applies for the guys who are like the top 1%, the guys that are going to go to the NFL, because the guys that aren't going to go to the NFL usually know they're not going into the NFL. So they take football second and they take academics first. They should. Normally, though, they're even like the backup kicker on the football team will say, I got football practice, I don't have time for class. That's the problem that I have with a system of paying college athletes, because these athletes don't want to work for it. The guys that don't play, like the guys that just ride the bench all 4 years, they do all the stuff that the other team does except for actually perform on the field. And they're expecting to get help on in the classroom. They're expecting to get stipends. They're expecting to get more money in their pocket just for being a part of the team. That doesn't make any sense to me. Plus, you add in the fact that only, what was it? It was either 10 or 15 colleges nationwide have a profit from their athletic department. And those, we're talking about like the Penn States, Alabama, Michigan, like those big public schools, right? You're not talking about the Robert Morris's. Robert Morris loses money from their athletics every year. That's a known fact. If we had to start paying players to come to Robert Morris, Robert Morris would disband their athletic program in an instant. No more Sewell, no more new basketball arena. That would be gone because players would go to Kentucky, where Kentucky can pay the Willie Cauley Stein's $1 million for 1 year until he goes to the NBA and makes 10. You know what I mean? There's no fair way to do it. There's no fair way to compensate each athlete. There's no fair way. There's no logistical way to get the money from just drawing money from places, except for raising tuition, raising cost of books, raising cost of everything for everyone who it doesn't affect, who it doesn't help. So if you implement a system like that, you're hurting everyone else except for the athletes. And part of managing a college, part of managing anything when you're looking at the big picture, is helping the majority of the people. If you can't help everyone, you at least have to help the majority of the people that you're representing. And I think that's what colleges have always done, and I think that's what the colleges should continue to do. Now, a trust, I would not be opposed to. That could be taken out of their tuition. They would have to pay a reduced tuition or something, and they would still have their scholarships. But a part of their free tuition would be pulled aside, put into this trust fund that they would get after they graduate. Because even NFL players, after they get out of the league, they go broke sometimes within like 5 or 6 years of playing because they don't know how to handle their money. And that's why academics is so important. I know here, at least in like the football and basketball programs, Andy Toole and John Banaszak are very pro-education, which is where the college athletic system needs to be. And I think it'll continue to be that way as long as we don't get into the Pandora's box, I'll say, of paying college athletes a formal system. Stipends, like $100 a semester or $100 a month, I'd be okay with, because everyone needs a little extra money in their pocket for spending money or whatever. And that would not even be hard to implement at all, like $100 for each athlete. That wouldn't be hard to accomplish at all. Colleges find money to build new buildings. Colleges can find money to pay players $100 a month in a stipend format. And that doesn't even have to be, they can't even touch that money until after they graduate. That could be the trust fund right there.
And or, I agree with that. That's
or,
what I'm.
Yeah, or they could get a stipend every month, or they could choose to have it all at once, all one big lump sum. And then if they screw it up and they tear their ligament and they have spent all their stipend, you know what? The school can say, we gave you that money. You can't have it both ways. This isn't that kind of system. So that's all I'll say for that. I'm tired of talking for a little bit. When we come back from this break, we will dive into Steelers to end the show and what they plan on doing against the newly reinstated Tom Brady and the New England Patriots offense that looks to demolish the putrid Steelers secondary. Sports Talk in the Berg, Army Radio, your campus, your voice.
I was With a wine stained lips, yes, yeah, you're nothing but trouble. Cold to the touch, but she's warm as a devil. I gave her my heart, but she won't hear my soul. She takes to the break, and I can't get more. You got me in chains. You got me in chains for your love, but I wouldn't change. No, I wouldn't change this love. You got me in chains. You got me in chains.
On the South Side with Jeremy Fowler, NFL senior writer who's covering the Steelers for NFL Nation. I'm Bob Holtzman. Jeremy, we've got the opener Thursday night. Yep. Steelers at the Patriots. Last time they went there, they got blown out. Now, no Martavis Bryant, no Le'Veon yep. Bell. What do they do offensively without two big weapons?
Well, what strikes me is how confident they are. They act like this is a scrimmage. Oh, Tom Brady's back. No big deal. We'll be fine. We knew this all along. And then with Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant out, you know, those are two huge weapons. But they feel they're good enough. And players point out, especially D'Angelo Williams, who told, I believe, you today that we have the best quarterback in the world. We have Ben Roethlisberger. We're going to be fine. He can make checks at the line. And even Roethlisberger himself said, ah, it's okay. We'll just go in an empty set. We don't even need running backs. Kind of joking, but almost half joking. There's some truth to that, too. This guy is that confident in his ability in the offense and to operate it. And he throws to Antonio Brown probably 30% of the time on scramble plays or broken plays. So he's going to go to him a lot. Those two have such a chemistry that they can manufacture offense without, you know, some key parts.
Yeah, Roethlisberger joked about the empty backfield. Yep. But you look at their depth chart, they have two running backs.
Yep.
They're fairly thin at wide receiver without Bryant. What do you see right now of this offense?
Yeah, if there's concern, then they're just not showing it, at least publicly. They have to move Will Johnson, who's an H-back, into the running back room as the number three option. So you're going to see a lot of Darius Heyward-Bey, at least in the lineup, as kind of the number three option. Roethlisberger has been talking him up a lot. He's been known for his drops in the past, but he has that elite speed. He's a former top 10 player in the draft, so at least he can give you something. And then Marcus Wheaton, here's a guy they really need. Antonio Brown, you know what you're going to get from him. D'Angelo Williams, you pretty much know. You know, he's an accomplished player. But Wheaton, he's a guy that they feel can really break out. Martavis Bryant got a lot of hype this offseason because of his natural ability, but Whedon's a guy in the slot that can operate in there. And, you know, he sees Julian Edelman, players like that, getting 90-catch, 100-catch years. He feels he can do some of that damage because of his quickness. So he's a guy that Ben will target pretty early.
And there you have it. Sports Talk in the Berg, Army Radio, your campus, your voice. Zach Loffer, Ian Kist, Colin Wilson, Sam Anthony. We're talking about now the Steelers and how they're going to somehow waltz into Foxborough, Tom Brady, get out of there with a win, somehow, some way. Let's talk about ways that they could do it with their lack of depth now without Bryant, without Bell, without Pouncey, without Tuitt. How are they going to do it? Ian, go.
Well, they need confidence, and that they have it. Everything's most things stacked against you. I think it's going to be a little of let's see if this will work. If it doesn't, adjust. Let's see if this will work. They want to start with the run game, see if that works. Use D'Angelo Williams, see if that works. See if they want to go short yardage, screens, or if they want to go cutthroat, throw the ball down the field, see what happens. You know Antonio Brown's going to be covered well all game, possibly double teamed. So I think it's going to be a bunch of, well, if this doesn't work, we'll have this in line. If this doesn't work, we'll have this. And then it comes down to how the defense, if the defense gives up early points and you're down 21-0 in the first quarter, then you're going to have to change and you're going to have to throw. You can't play soft. You can't play safe. You got to go out there. And they really, Patriots are going to come in with everything against them. The Steelers, everybody says they're not going to be well. The preseason doesn't show much, but they'll say, well, you're 1-3 in the preseason, awful performances. So they want to come in and say and show, oh, no, we're the Steelers. We're prepared. Let's get the season going on Thursday night football, kick off the season well. And I think it's a bunch of just see how the game goes and adjust to how the defense plays, because you can score as much as you want, but the offense can't prevent the Patriots offense from scoring. The defense is – that's their job. So I think a lot of it has to do with how the defense comes out too.
I think the RMU football team learned that you can't just be running the ball through the middle for 1 yard every down.
Yeah.
Same way the Steelers might have to do that this Thursday. Go ahead, Colin.
I think they definitely need to rely in the pass game. I don't think you can rely on D'Angelo Williams. He's old enough for an NFL player, let alone a running back in the NFL. And Dre Archer, it isn't his junior year at Kent State anymore. It's the NFL. So I don't think they'll be able to rely on those backs all that much. But you still have Marcus Wheaton, short route guy who can get you yardage if he needs to. Antonio Brown, we all know about Antonio Brown. We need to touch on that. Heck of a player. Hayward Bay, deep down the field, speed guy. He's that guy that's, you know.
He's essentially Martavis Bryant without Martavis Bryant.
Yes.
But with worse hands and worse route running ability. And
definitely. 7 years in the league, seven or eight. It does help a little bit being a vet, but no, he's not that seventh overall pick by Oakland that he was. You know, he isn't that. So it would definitely help if he could step up, but I don't really see it. Sammy Coates, big play guy at Auburn. They need everything that they can get against New England, who, I mean, New England has a great rush defense. So they're and with D'Angelo Williams, I don't think they have to worry about it anyway. So it's not like they're going to have to bring up safeties against the rush. So they're going to be able to kind of lax on the run game. They're going to be able to double cover Antonio Brown with Brian out. So I definitely think that you're going to have a good game from Wheaton, maybe see a little bit from Coates, Hayward Bay down the field. You're going to need it all, really, in my opinion, and especially on defense. Mm. I mean, I haven't seen the secondary guard anyone well this preseason, let alone Gronkowski or Edelman. So we'll see how that goes.
Sam?
Well, first I want to say, for Darius Hayward-Bate, does it really count as playing a season when you play for the Raiders?
Good point.
Amari Cooper is going to find that out real quick when he
plays. Oh, man, and I love him, too.
It's the place where wide receivers go to die.
Yes.
Same place as Cleveland with quarterbacks.
That's really a shame. But, you know, back to the Steelers, I'm going to go against these guys. I think that the Steelers, I'm going to make a bold statement here, they're going to win, and they're going to win in the highest scoring season opener in the history of the NFL.
Oh, what was the previous highest season opener?
I have no idea, but it's going to be really high.
I'm
going to
look that
up
right now. All right. Yeah, keep going.
You do that.
I'll look that up.
Because this, you know, I want you to, you know, everyone talks about the, you know, as you said, the putrid Steelers secondary. You know, our best guy is, you know, Brandon Boykin from the Eagles, who cares? But I want you to look at the Patriots secondary. You know, who's their leading safety right now?
They did lose Revis, but they have Patrick Chung and I forget their other one.
What's his name? I should know this.
They have Malcolm Butler at corner, which could help. But,
yeah, but their leading safety is Malcolm Butler. And come on. I mean, he made one catch in the Super Bowl. I'm not looking at this guy like he's an all-pro safety. You know, the Steelers, even though you're missing, you know, Martavis Bryant, you still have Antonio Brown, who arguably is the best receiver in football. You know, he had the leading receiving yards last year. I think that with, you know, Roethlisberger behind, you know, he makes plays. It doesn't matter whether you have, you know, Marquise Pouncey behind center. He's a guy who, you know, even in his age, can still move around the pocket and make those plays. And like Ian said, with the chemistry with Antonio Brown, or I think that was just said earlier, but I think that the Steelers are going to still make those plays and score. And I think as long as they get the offense going, they'll be able to score enough points where it doesn't matter what their defense does.
You know, I'm looking for this thing, and I cannot find it for the life of me. The most points in a game ever was 1966, Washington versus New York, and that was 72. The score was 47-25.
That's
Yeah.
All right. Well, they're gonna break that. I'm gonna change it. It's gonna.
Oh, wait. Most points, both teams. Oh, okay, 72-41.
All right. Well, that may be a little bit tougher. All right. I'm gonna take that back, but it's gonna be a high score.
Wait.
Game.
Wait. Hang on. That's.
It's gonna get higher. I just know it.
See, I'll disagree with you. I'll go Pittsburgh scores less than 14 this game.
Ooh.
I'll go less than 14.
That is a bold statement that considering they scored over 25 per game last year.
I will go less than 14. Or now I'll go 14 and a half. I'll go
over under 14 and a half.
I'll go under 14 and a half. Okay. I'll let them score two touchdowns. Is that fair?
So I want to hear this. I want to hear why.
I just don't think their offense has what it takes. I think Bryant being out, Le'Veon being out, Pouncey being out, it just hurts them all around. I mean, they won't be able to rush up the middle, especially against the New England defense. Antonio Brown, yeah, he's a talent. He'll find a way to get 6-7 catches, but I've seen A.J. Green get 6-7 catches against the Browns, and it doesn't matter because, you know, they can't get anything else going. With Le'Veon being out, you have to depend on D'Angelo Williams, and I just don't think you can. Not, I mean, if it was 26-year-old D'Angelo Williams, I think they'd be all right, but it's, I think he's, what, 32 now, 10 years in the league. That's tough, especially for a running back. So, but, you know, I'll go in. I don't think they'll do well in New England, especially in New England. But I'll go in. I'll watch the game.
All right.
I'll take your word for it.
99 points. So you're looking at 51 or 50-50. That's tough.
They could do it.
That is tough.
You know, just watch the game on Thursday. Wait and see.
I'll say this. I am confident that the Patriots over under 30, 31 and a half points. I'm going way over. I'm going at least 40 for the Patriots in this game. Because the Steelers secondary, they just basically said they just took Shamarco Thomas out of the starting lineup. So they put in Will Allen and Mike Mitchell in the back two for the back safeties. So if those are your two safeties, how are you going to stop Rob Gronkowski / Julian Edelman over the top? You're not going to. The answer is you're not.
I mean, Seattle.
Seattle even couldn't stop them, right? Seattle couldn't do anything against them. They score. How many points did New England score in that game? 31, mm-hmm. 24 with 24 minus it was 31.
31, I believe.
What are you doing? 31. All right, so if they score 31 against Seattle,
exactly.
What do you think they're going to do against
Brandon
Boykin?
It'll be a little rough Shamarco this game, Thomas. But Rob Gronkowski, I mean, they don't have anyone in the secondary to guard him. I just don't think they'll keep
him
under 100
yards.
If
the Steelers make this a game, I will be happy.
I will too.
Last season, I thought they were going to go 8-8. I was wrong by three games. I was pleasantly surprised. Before my game prediction for the opening game is Steelers 21, Patriots 49. So that's where I'm at. 49-21. Except it's hard to predict scores now because of the 2-point conversions being so much better of an option. So scores are like 16-10 or like 16-11. So it's hard to predict scores, but that's what I'm going with, 49-21.
All right, I'm going to say, ready for this? It's going to be 56-48.
All right. Oh, my. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Wow. I will go 27-10.
Patriots.
New England, yes.
27-10. Ian.
35-31, New England.
Okay, he's got a little bit of a high score in there.
35-31. Yeah, I'm going 49-21. Season predictions. The Steelers have the toughest schedule in the NFL based on last season's win percentages from opponents. They have to play the NFC West, which includes Seattle. They have to play the AFC South, which includes Indianapolis. And, again, they play New England. That doesn't bode well for another repeat 11-5 season. What are you going with, starting with Sam?
All right, so
to close out the show. This is our last thing.
I definitely feel like I'm going to be the more optimistic one here, but I'm going to say they're going to go 10-6.
They win the division or do they make it as a wild card?
Wild card. I think that the Cincinnati Bengals will win the division.
Not Baltimore.
You know what? Baltimore, I don't think, has those pieces. You know, they have a kind of iffy tight end situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Joe Flacco is a great quarterback, but he's just never been able to kind of consistently. I mean, neither is Andy Dalton.
Okay.
But, yeah. I think.
The Bengals fan.
Oh, my.
I mean, you know, when you win a playoff game, just let me know.
Oh,
all right?
Man.
Believe me, I am not an Andy Dalton fan by any means. I don't see the Bengals do much this year. If they make the playoffs, definitely
right.
not.
Right.
But, I'm going to go – I think they'll start out 1-3, I believe. The Steelers will. But I think they'll finish 8-8.
I'll go
8-8 even. I do not think that'll be enough for the playoffs, though. I haven't looked at all the schedules, all the other scenarios, but I don't think 8-8 will be enough.
Just thinking straight AFC North. Where third or behind two teams or behind one team?
It'll be close with a second team. It'll be second or third.
Okay.
like I said, I'll have to look at Cincinnati's and Baltimore's schedule. I don't think Cleveland will do much this year with a quarterback
situation. No Johnny Manziel, you know, Super Bowl run?
No. Their defense is pretty good, but I don't see Manziel or McCown, so I don't know. 8-8, I'll go with Pittsburgh.
It's not what I told you guys pre-show. 11-5. I don't know. I'm optimistic.
11-5.
Wow.
I don't know. Like,
that is a bold statement.
That's what I'm talking about.
I just went over
considering they won't schedule. Have Bell. Considering they won't have Pouncey until at least week 10 or at least week 9 because he's on the short term IR designated to return. They won't be with Bryant for 4 games, Bell for 2, Pouncey for 9 or Pouncey for 8. Tuitt for 3, I believe, maybe. That may be true, that may be not. They lost Sweezum.
Yeah, true.
Hartley's okay, but there's a reason why he was a free agent.
Isn't Hartley hurt?
Hartley's hurt, yeah.
Hartley is hurt, but he probably will be able to go at some point.
Yeah, he's just
going to
miss week 1, right?
Yeah. So they have Scobie. There's a reason why these guys they picked off the scrap heap. There's a reason why they were not on a team previously. I think we can safely bet that they are downgrades from Sweezum. But 11-5.
It's evident they're going to start off a little slow because you only miss Bryant 4 games, Bell 2, and then by week 4, you're offensively besides Pouncey, you're back in it offensively.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have them starting 3-1, but I do have them losing to the obvious Seattle, Denver. I have them losing against Oakland and Cleveland.
Oakland.
Cleveland's always good. For the past couple of years, they're good for one win against
Oakland,
the Steelers.
Oakland.
And they work Cincinnati and they need Dalton.
At home, we're better against Oakland.
Derek Carr and Amari Cooper.
Terrell Pryor beat us last time.
That's fair. That is a fair statement.
I know we
that
don't
still hurts
we don't
bit.
Perform well in Oakland, but now they are at Heinz Field for that game, but still I don't know. I think the Raiders are getting underrated this season with Carr, but I don't know. It just seems like we play better against the good team. So maybe Denver, Seattle will be a win. And we always lose to
that's true. We did
Cleveland,
lose to the Jets and the Bucks.
Arizona, St. Louis teams, which those teams are getting better. But I don't know. I'm trying to be a little optimistic here.
All right.
Like some people make them – I may sound like Bob Pompiani right now, who always says the Steelers always have a chance to go to the Super Bowl, and we all know
they're
going to
win. They're going
to
win.
But last year's team got underrated, and then I think we're gonna get second in the division.
Okay.
Cincinnati's going to take it.
Okay.
That's my prediction.
My prediction would be 9-7. Because once you get Bell back, once you get Bryant back, I think those are those – I think you come out of this 4-game stretch 1-3 before you go to I think St. Louis, right? Week 5. Is that accurate?
I think let me check. St. Louis is week 3.
Okay, so you get Bell back for week 3. That could be the win at St. Louis since they're going to get Bell back. And then
it'll be tough with Baltimore the following Thursday though.
Right. That's the problem. I think they're going to lose to Baltimore in that game. I think they lose the first two, win week 3, and then lose week 4. So I think that's 3 out of the 7 losses right there. And then you got Seattle, Indianapolis, two losses right there, especially at Seattle. Man, like they do not lose at home in Seattle. So I think 9-7 is a very realistic prediction. But we actually ran way over time today. So we'll pick this up when we get back next week. Same time, Tuesday, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock on RMU Radio. Don't forget to check out our podcast on RMU Podbean. It should be up. Our last show has actually just gone up today. So check the last week's out if you haven't already. Sports Talk in the Berg should be up sometime later this week. I'm Zach Loffer, Ian Kist, Colin Wilson, Sam Anthony with you for Sports Talk in the Berg on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Got locked away and we lost it all today. Tell me honestly, would you